Hello, everybody, and welcome to Patriotic Weekly Review, episode number 119. And we have a jam-packed show for you tonight. We have Harry, and we're going to have Natty very soon. And the show is largely going to be dedicated to the art of prepping. And the art of prepping is to do with preparing yourself for the worst. And we all know there is a lot more terrible things on the horizon for our people. So this is going to be a very interesting show with hopefully quite a bit of practical advice. Now, we are live tonight on DLive. We are live tonight on Odyssey, which is our preferred platform. We are live tonight on Wake Up UK, and we are live tonight on RadioAlbion.com. Now, RadioAlbion.com is the home of Sven Longshanks. He is a great nationalist. He puts out wonderful material. You can find my appearances with Dr. David Duke and Dr. Patrick Slattery every week over on RadioAlbion.com. So make sure you have it bookmarked. Make sure you have the DLive channel subbed. If you're a DLive user, it is Laura Taylor's channel. And also, please make sure that you are subbed to me on Odyssey. All the replays of these shows go up straight after the show on Odyssey and BitChute, so make sure you've got me there too. And if you can do me a little favor, if you're watching on Odyssey, give the stream a like. That helps push it up the algorithms. That gets more people seeing it. It pushes it to the front page. And if you're on social media, please, please do share this stream because it's going to be a good one. I'm obviously only on Telegram and Gab, so if anyone can share it to Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all the rest, please do that. Now, if you would like to contribute to the show, the best way to contribute to the show is via Entropy. The Entropy link is on the Odyssey. The Entropy link will be spammed in both of the chats by myself, Jason, and Laura throughout the show. You can send paid super chats. Those paid super chats are gratefully received. We read them all out live on the show. And you can also send non-paid questions and we read out the best of them. If you would like to donate in other ways, another great way to donate is via cryptocurrency. All my cryptos are on my Gab and my Telegram. You can also email me at mark@thefallofwesternman.com if you want to send a bank transfer. Also, if you wish to use other cryptocurrencies that you don't see listed on my social media, a great way to find them is emailing me again at mark@thefallofwesternman.com. And that's how you can reach me. If you have anything you want to say to me, anything you want to ask me, or anything you want to discuss with me, I'm always here to help. I'm always here to offer advice. I am always around, except for this Friday, because this Friday, not only do I have an excellent video coming out about the complete failure of the war in Afghanistan, and that will be out at 1 p.m. UK time. But later that evening, I will be debating Destiny on the kill stream. I will be advertising that in advance. Please make sure you're there in the chat to support me. That will be a big Odyssey exclusive. So make sure you are there, and hopefully we will have an awful lot of viewers. Now, we're still waiting for Natty to arrive. He's texted me saying his computer's a bit slow starting up. So while we're waiting for Natty to arrive, I'm going to throw you over to Jason. Jason, what have you been up to this week, my friend, and who is on tap?
Well, we're having a magnificent week here in the United States, learning all about the failure of the military in Afghanistan, which, by the way, I'm still waiting for the phone call from all of those folks on the Hill who told me that we would absolutely win. And I said, we would absolutely lose. And that's what ends up happening. Nobody's calling me. What a surprise that is. But yeah, having a fantastic time. I just want everybody to know that I'm out of pocket today because the AC is not working at my house. And so it's in the mid 80s or so. It's boiling inside. I'm elsewhere. And there is also a tornado watch. And so keeping an eye on that, if I suddenly disappear, I have been blown to Oz. But I'm really excited to talk with Harry and Natty today. So I'm going to toss it over so we can get underway.
Well, thank you so much. Well, Natty has just arrived. So because you're late, Natty, I'll introduce you last. I'm going to throw it over first to Harry. Harry is the host of the True UK Show, the most confusingly named show ever because it abbreviates to Truck, which can be quite confusing. But Harry is one of the brightest young stars in the British nationalist movement. He's somebody that I have an awful lot of respect for. He's been on the show numerous times before. There is a Patriotic Alternative Conference coming up later this year. So if you are booked in for that, make sure you check your emails, because you'll have an email updating you about that. The PA conference is back on later this year. Check your emails. And Harry is one of the guest speakers at that conference. So tonight you can have a little taster of what you're going to get when you come to that conference and see one of our brightest young stars. Harry, how are you doing, my friend? Introduce yourself and tell everyone a bit about you.
Mark, I'm doing absolutely excellent. Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me on the show. It's great to be on with Jason again. You, Mark, and Natty as well, my good old friend. Good to see you again. It's going to be a great show talking about prepping, and yeah, excited for the PA conference. Come on, I believe it's in October time. Can't wait. Going to be speaking there. Got some incredible speakers as well. Got the mighty Keith Woods speaking there. Got Morgoth, big man Morgoth speaking out. Just going to be incredible. Numerous incredible speakers. Last time I came to the conference, huge white pill, finally being around loads of surrounding nationalists, and great environment, well set up, very secure, excellent venue, polite, lovely people, and it's such a pleasure to be part of such a great movement. And yeah, so as for my work, at the minute I used to put out videos, but you know, I felt I said everything I needed to say on YouTube, and obviously we all know YouTube censorship. There's no point making content really on YouTube anymore unless you're going to really dumb it down to normie friendly. But even as the Iconocast said on the recent Morgcast, you know, if you make a normie account, you go on, you can't really see much content from our guys. If you're just signing up a new account, doesn't really get recommended. So you can find me on Telegram, and I'll show it at the end of the show. I can't exactly remember my handle at the minute. I believe it's, we'll show it at the end. I'll find it for you. But yeah, I just put out Telegram posts pertaining to the news cycle and my reaction to it.
Well, thank you very much. And the other returning guest is the indomitable Natty. Natty was obviously the co-host of another show in the past, and one of the two reasons to watch that show. He is a highly entertaining gentleman. He used to be on our monthly book review as well, and he did an incredible, incredible job of debating a guy that talked about Zionist power, but was a bit sketchy on the JQ as a whole. And Natty pretty much destroyed him on that topic, which was very, very interesting. So if you want to watch that book review, go to my BitChute and Odyssey. You'll find it there. Very, very entertaining indeed. It's an absolute pleasure to have Natty back on the show. It has been a long time coming. Natty, how are you doing, my friend?
Not too bad, thank you, mate. You have to apologise if my voice sounds slightly scratchy. I've just been coxing a boat, and that includes lots of shouting and swearing at the crew. So my voice is a little bit hoarse, but I'm really looking forward to getting into the subject tonight, prepping something I've been thinking about for a while. I got into a deep, deep black pill mood about the direction of travel this country is heading in. And I think being prepared is, you know, one way to keep your mind occupied and start thinking about ways for you to, I don't know, to stay, to keep well, basically, whatever happens, whatever the future may hold. I'm glad we're going to dive into that topic. I mean, on the subject of Afghanistan, I've got some thoughts as well. So I'll be looking forward to talking through that one with you guys. It's good to be here with Harry as well. Harry made a video about a year ago about the lotus flower. I can't remember the title, but it really stuck with me about the state of modern people and how comfy and how well off we are. So it'll be very interesting to have him here tonight for this one.
Good to see you too, my friend.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, let's get into this. But before we do, I'm going to have 50 seconds on the issue of zero COVID, because we keep hearing this term zero COVID, and this tells you where certain parts of the world are going. These maniacs in control have decided that we now have to have zero cases of certain diseases. Imagine zero flu or zero HIV. They never tried it with those, did they? But we have to have zero COVID. And that means perpetual lockdowns. You get one case, you're in lockdown. And that means everything locked down, like New Zealand and large parts of Australia, which often means food shortages and potentially could lead to major civil unrest and even the breakup of our society. I think we are living in times that would have been hard to predict a little while ago. And that's why this show is so important, because as we see these lockdowns roll out, as we see these news reports about food shortages, about supply chain blockages, we had another today. They've said that 50 Nando's stores have closed around the UK, not due to a lack of business, not due to people not wanting to eat at Nando's. It's relatively nice. They're not my favorite restaurant, but they're having supply chain problems. They can't get the chicken. They can't get the food. And this is all because of this COVID madness. So one of the best ways to guard against this is to prepare, is to be that family or that individual who has everything you need in advance. So in case of serious crisis, you are ahead of the game. So I'm going to throw it over to Natty and Harry. You're the prepping experts. You're the guys who are doing this prepping. I've never prepped before, so I don't really have any takes on this. So what does this involve and how do you guys do it?
Well, the first thing to say is that I'm certainly not an expert, but there are some really simple things I think me and Harry could recommend to everyone. And the other thing to note is that there are quite a few ways to approach this. And even the word prepping will probably, if you're anything like me, conjure up images of Americans in the woods with underground bunkers, hundreds of guns, tons of ammo and food and gas masks and all of the rest of it. Obviously, we're a lot different in this country. We have much less land. We're surrounded by people most of the time. So I think being prepared for various situations isn't going to look like some nuclear apocalypse. That is one eventuality, but there are stages between here and there that we do need to be prepared for. I don't know if you remember, Harry, Mark, Jason, a couple of years ago, Germany announced, I think it released a PSA to its citizens and told them to basically prepare 2 weeks' worth of food and clean water in case of a national emergency. At the time, the German government announced that this was for natural disasters, possibly a nuclear plant breaking down, although we on the right summarize that this is probably because of the migrant crisis that they were having over there at the time and something along those lines. I think it happened in the wake of one of the terrorist attacks over there. But when a government starts telling you to prepare, I think it's time to start taking it seriously. And nothing has driven this home harder than the way that the governments are currently treating their own people. Whether you're a dissident right winger or whoever you are, that's to ignore that would be absolutely insane. And I guess that's why we're here.
Harry, what's your initial... How did you get into it, Harry? Because you're a very young lad. And when you think of preppers, Natty's probably right. You think of some grizzled US veteran in a bear skin, in a coon skin hat, with a large sort of military vest, a rifle over his shoulder, and an underground bunker stacked with tens and tens of thousands of tins of beans. What got you into it? Because you're not really a typical kind of guy. Mm. And how have you approached it?
Well, I first started throughout the whole COVID thing. I called it right from the beginning. It was a scam. It was being used for political gain, for further control. And I thought I was muted then. But ever since I've seen things from the World Economic Forum talking of supply chain breakdowns, food shortages, seeing it creeping into the news cycle that we've got a shortage of, I believe it's 1 million HGV drivers, and they're trying to blame that on Brexit now. I was just thinking to myself, it doesn't take a genius to put two and two together and think, I've got to get ahead of the curve here. Because sooner or later, everyone now is so dependent on the globalist system, going into supermarkets, buying your food. You're so dependent on the whole system. The people that are oppressing you at the minute, you're dependent, or pretty much everyone is dependent on them providing food, providing water, everything you can think of, clothing, housing. And if we really want to get ahead of the curve and we really want to beat this beast, we can't be dependent on them. So we have to start preparing now. And I think that it's an adaptation of a mindset, an adaptation of a lifestyle, that we can't carry on like this. We can't carry on expecting the people who are oppressing us, the people who hate us, to carry on supplying for us. So I feel that, again, it's an adaptation of the mindset, an adaptation of the lifestyle. And I think when we speak of prep, as you said, it's not quite the imagery of some guy in you know, woolly sheepskin clothing, running through the woods, chasing a pig with a bayonet. It's more so going into more natural places, going into rurality with like-minded people, networking with like-minded people, and saying, look, we've had enough of the city life. We've had enough of your clubs. We've had enough of wage cucking. I've had enough with this system. I'm going to go out. Me, five other nationalists, we're going to go out. We're going to build our own house. We're going to buy a plot of land, and we're going to completely separate, and we're going to start preparing for the future, because it is going to be bleak and tough. But you know what? I've actually got a lot of people are quite blackpilled about the current situation. I completely understand. You know, it is a very depressing situation, but I'm actually quite optimistic for the future. Finally, we've got an opportunity to finally get out of cuckoldry, eternal cuckoldry and wage cuckery. We've got an opportunity to finally go out into nature like we've always been talking about. You know, since I know a lot of people have been in this before me, but for me it was kind of the Trump thing that really, 2016, that really woke me up. But we've always been talking about going back into nature and attaining European excellence, but now we've finally got the opportunity to do so. So there's multiple avenues which I'm sure we'll go into and prepping, such as you know, location, means of income, lots of exciting topics to get into.
Well, the first thing I want to ask is about food, because I'll say this. There was a time at the beginning of the COVID crisis when people started panic buying because the whole nation had the idea of prepping for something worse. And the vast majority of them cocked it up in the most royal way possible. I don't know whether you guys saw, but people bought as many loaves of bread as they could carry. They bought all the chicken and meat they could. They bought fresh fish. And about a week to 10 days after this mad buying panic, the press were reporting that millions and millions of pounds of food were just lying rotting in bin bags because people had bought things like fresh chicken. They bought all the fresh chicken they could carry, realized actually it's gone off pretty quickly. And there were just mountains of rotting meat, moldy bread, fruit, veg that had all gone off. And this seems like a really basic question, because to me, the answer is you need to get tinned food. But I'll start with Natty. This did affect a lot of normal people. I don't know if you saw these headlines. I don't know what this says about the average intelligence of the British people, that they were buying things like chicken and bread to prep. But what would you do to get yourself started?
Well, you're right. It does sound basic. And I know that Harry can drill into this a little bit more. I know he's gone keto recently, which talks to the diet that you might require or not, as the case may be, if you're low on food or if the shelf's empty. But it's very simple things. I mean, the things that go off your everyday staples, milk, bread, that's no good. And I heard recently one of the Americans talk about, If you were displaced, if you're a displaced person, if you had to move from wherever your family home or wherever you are, you don't want to be the guy turning up with a chest of drawers or a sack full of jewelry or something that's absolutely useless. Dried pasta, dried rice, a 10-kilogram sack of rice, you know, that's something that's very useful. So tins, and then certain things that have a very long shelf life. Certain tins have a very long shelf life. It's always good to check and rotate them, especially if you're going to keep them in your cupboards. But certainly bottles of water and bits and pieces like this that are not going to go off in it. You can keep dry in a cellar or under your stairs or something like that. And at the very basic level, having a couple of weeks worth of food is just a good idea, because most of us know what it's like when the power goes out for a few hours or a day. Those things happen all the time. It's, you know, storms or lightning or whatever, a problem with a power company. You know what to do then. You get the candles, you light the candles, and you sit around, and, you know, the TV goes off, and it's quite romantic and it's quite fun. But if you stretched it out for 3 days, could you last? If you stretched out for 2 weeks, could you last? And then obviously leading on from there is when you have to start thinking about being self-sufficient. But the point is, if you accept that the government is abusive to the native population, which I think all of us would agree is the case, if you were a housewife, the way to insulate yourself from an abusive partner would be to make yourself as self-sufficient as possible. You may rely on other people around you. But the best way to get out of that abusive relationship is to make yourself self-sufficient. And that's the way you duck the punches, and that's the way you escape.
What's your take on this, Harry? Have you stockpiled oodles of chicken, which is now smelling rather weird and annoying the people living next door to you? Or are you somebody who's been intelligent enough to realize that you need cans and dried food?
Intelligent prepper, yeah. I was always, every time I go to my local shop, all the time, it would just be right. Two tins of tuna every time in the basket. 2 5-litre tanks of water in the basket. It's not a such thing as in like apocalypse. Everyone rush down to the shops. All the shelves get cleared. All that sort of thing. It's more of an incremental thing that you should be concerned about every time you go shopping. So every time you go shopping for your everyday essentials, like, right, okay, if I go shopping twice a week, let's say go shopping twice a week, every time I go in, I get 3-4 pack of tuna, I get a couple of jars of mayonnaise, I get a few liters of olive oil. And then, again, as you were saying, Natty, it does pertain in and lead into the keto diet, and not to be, I know it's a shock for some people, but it really is an interesting way of eating. If you look at the modern Western diet, which was really strangely introduced coincidentally after World War II, really strange how a lot of these just crazy things just happened straight after World War II, and so just really, really coincidental thing. But and crazy as well how all these modern illnesses come up as soon as these a very carb-centric diet come in. If you switch your diet into a high-fat diet, you've got increased longevity, you've got increased sustainability, and you've got a longer shelf life with your food. So you can literally survive on eggs alone. If you moved into the country and you found a local farmer, local produce, and you worked out some sort of deal where you got loads and loads of eggs every single week, you could probably live to 100, 120. You could live to 200, maybe with the assistance of some adrenochrome.
Please don't start taking adrenochrome, Harry. Come on.
No, you're better than that. No, only kidding. But there's lots of avenues you can take for high calorific foods. I mean, olive oil was, you should avoid generally seed oils, like sunflower oil is quite bad for you. Other oils are quite bad for you, but avocado oil you can get. You can also get olive oil, which I personally believe is quite healthy for you. Chia seeds as well, excellent natural source of fiber. Got a few carbs in there, but also high fat. And you can start to eat extremely healthily for very cheap. And you can reach another thing about prepping as well is, especially with the whole COVID situation, the way things are going with vaccine passports, which are very soon, I believe, about to be implemented imminently. You could get to the stage where if you're unvaccinated, you're denied NHS service. And whereas before, nationalists, they could get sloppy with their health, maybe get diabetes or get cancer, things like this. By pursuing ketogenic excellence, I believe, you can rid yourself of a lot of the medicinal poisons that Big Pharma inflicts upon you. And I believe this is just another avenue of prepping. But look, yeah, so things like nuts, eggs, obviously avocados, they're going to go out of date. But foods that are very high in fat, foods that are very satiating, should be a priority. But then again, things such as starch, so stocking up on lots of potatoes, storing them in a cool, dry place. As Natty said, 10 kg bags of basmati rice are very cheap. And even every time you went shopping, you've got a 10 kg bag of basmati rice. This is a very efficient way of stocking up for the future.
Now, one thing I'll ask before No White Guilt jumps in with some questions is, I regularly play survival games, and the first thing you try and find is food. But if you're raiding a supermarket, the next logical aisle to go to is always the medical aisle, because that's quite important. Now, do you guys keep medical supplies? And also, if you were storing things, do you guys also store seeds? Because I've often wondered, if things really went south, a few chickens and plenty of seeds, and you could grow a lot of your own food, and you could feed the chickens on scraps and have eggs. And there are plenty of ways that you can actually generate things to eat rather than just running down your stocks. Is that something either of you guys have got into?
Chickens are incredibly, they're a very good source of food, and they've sustained people who have been disengaged from the system or in a hard spot. I remember reading about some of the guys who were captured at the fall of Singapore in the Second World War. And in the Japanese internment camps, they were given very little food, but some of them did manage to get their hands on chickens, and these were highly prized. You know, guys who were suffering from dysentery and being worked to death, you know, plowing through bamboos with nothing but hatchets, which is an incredibly tough thing to do. I mean, these guys were treated abominably by the Japanese in the Second World War. But one of the things that kept them going and gave them purpose was keeping just even a single chicken. And most of us have a garden, and you might be looked at in askance by your neighbors if you put up a little cage and kept a few chickens in there. But it's possible to keep chickens inside. So if you've got any room or any inclination to look after or get started looking after something that's going to provide you with food, chickens is a really good way to go. You can obviously get the protein from the eggs, and then if they, you know, when their lifespan's gone, you can kill them and cook them up and eat them. So chickens are great, and they're incredibly easy to get hold of in this country. Battery farms are always getting rid of chickens, so if that's something you want to think about, that's definitely a good route to go down.
And do you also store medical supplies as well, Matty?
So medical supplies is a tough one. I've got some tourniquets left over. And a basic household first aid kit isn't really up to scratch. The main thing I would say about medicine for anyone who's, you know, even basic first aid trained, is medical textbooks or basic field craft or survival medicine. You don't have to educate yourselves on those things, but having books in your house or in your bug out bag or whatever you're prepping is a very, very good idea. Imagine if someone in your family got hurt, or if they had a problem that was beyond the capability of you to deal with just from your own knowledge. If you can't pick up your phone and look at the internet to find the solution to some problem that someone's got, be it, you know, digestional problems, whether it's a lung problem, you know, a bleed somewhere that you're not sure how to deal with. If you've got books on hand, you're not going to be relying on other people, and you actually become incredibly useful in any situation if you've got the confidence and the knowledge to pull that kind of thing off. So medicines, yes, is a good idea. Having loads of bandages. But I think people forget how quick you can go through bandages. If you've got a wound that's kind of at risk of being infected and you need to keep it clean, you're going to be changing bandages 2-3 times a day. That's a lot of material you're going to go through, and boiling and sterilizing is one way to go, but having a fresh supply on hand is a very good idea.
So Harry, are you a man who keeps livestock, and what is your medical supplies cabinet like?
It's everyone's dream, isn't it? You know, you've got the beautiful mountains in the background, you've got your own farm, you've got your beautiful wife and children in the middle of nowhere, isolation. To be fair, maybe if you've had a Netflix subscription, a few drag queen shows down the road as well, that would probably be my utopia. But you know, that would just be like, oh, the dream. But no, obviously in the future, if I have my own ranch or my own property, it would be an excellent sustainable food source. If you had loads of chickens laying loads of eggs, if you had 6 to 12 eggs a day, the wonders that does for your testosterone and your immune system. But I'd also like to add as well, the one of the best things to stock up on is supplements, quite an underrated one as well. I recommend, so cod liver oil tablets, great for your vitamin D, vitamin A I believe as well. And if you're a carbohydrate consumer, couldn't be me, but I recommend lots of vitamin C supplements as well. You can get lots of vitamin C gummies as well. But herbal ashwagandha is also a great one for reducing stress. You can get collagen as well, great for your joints. And zinc as well. Zinc is probably the most vital of nutrients or minerals for your body. And really, really one that I recommend that anyone stock up on. But as for medical supplies, I believe that through supplements and through healthy eating, low inflammation foods, I believe that you can really reject a lot of modern day medicine. You know, I've got some friends that have been on keto, and they've said they haven't been to a doctor since. They haven't needed really many medical supplies at all. You know, you even with a simple water fast as well. Obviously, if you're in a survival situation, starvation mode, there's not really much food about. I wouldn't recommend going into a state of starvation or water fasting. But if you've got a, say, for instance, you caught COVID, then you could just go on a water fast and just rid the body of, I believe I saw a poster. Obviously, this is a bit of bro science. I'm not a qualified nutritionist or scientist, but I believe that viruses thrive off glycogen anyway. So by simply starving the body through a water fast, you can get yourself in tip-top shape.
I think the thing to remember, Harry, is as much as the recommendations on keeping yourself personally fit and in good nick are extremely useful and make you very resilient, I think we have a view that if things go wrong, you're going to be looking after yourself. And most guys here could spend a long time in discomfort, maybe out in, you know, sleeping rough or moving around and making themselves comfortable. The thing to remember is if you're truly going to become the, you know, the person you should become, you're going to be looking after family members who may be old, who may be very young, who may be prone to sickness, who may have problems with themselves. It's all very well to fantasize about, you know, becoming John Rambo and slinking around the woods or whatever that is. But the truth is you're going to be relying on other people and they may be relying on you. Are you really willing to leave your family to suffer? Are you really willing to leave, you know, your brothers and sisters, young children to suffer, or your children, you're going to let them suffer just because you've prepared yourself and got yourself ready. Mm. And then when the time comes that something goes wrong, you know, the power goes out or whatever, then all of a sudden you find that everyone else is depending on you and looking to you. So there is a mindset thing that you need to kind of think about your larger circle of people, and I guess that ties back into what's going on at PA with the community building. If you've got people in that mindset, things are going to become much easier for you.
I fully agree.
Jason, do you have any questions about prepping, or have you ever done any prepping yourself?
I have not done any prepping, but I'm excited about this show because it sounds like Harry and Natty are talking about something that's realistic. Very often in the United States, we hear people talk about things that are very unrealistic. And in fact, over the many years in the white sympathetic sphere, I've come across these people, these cravens that many of us call them, these hobbyists. And they get into concern, sympathy for our people, our countries. And then they become hobbyists of this sort that is easily identifiable. You all just spoke briefly about the stereotype, like the coonskin cap, but they're even more high tech. I mean, I knew, and some have heard me tell a couple of the stories over the years of some folks that I knew where I went down into their shelters that they had built, and they had toilet paper down there that had degraded over the years. One of the guys, actually his wife and his children, ended up being anti-white because he spent all of his time and money on building this underground fortress and learning about how to do all of the medicine, how to do all of the hunting, how to do all of the husbandry and the planting. And there is an infinite number of things. I mean, you think about it, it's actually like if you believe for a moment that you could go off of, you hear these people talk about like go off the grid and you're just going to live out there only reliant on yourself. It's impossible. Everybody who actually is anywhere near that will tell you that you are reliant on civilization to survive. You're reliant on the fuels. It's impossible. What you all are talking about sounds much more realistic. And it's the kind of thing that I say, this 3 month, being able to maintain yourself and your family for 3 months is something that when you really get down to the nitty gritty of making that happen, you figure out how much food you actually need, how much water, how to filter water that you would need to get from a new source, really is something that is challenging. Beyond 3 months, you're talking about societal collapse. And at that point, all of that beans and the toilet paper and et cetera that you have stocked up is now junk, because now you have roving bands who are there for murder and they'll take it away from you. You'll never be able to defend yourself against an army of roving bands. And you're talking about things like medical illnesses. People with serious, many of our people today have serious issues that they need regular medication for. And so you have to prepare for that as well. But being prepared for this stoppages in civilization, I think that is something that we can all do. And it will behoove us to do that, because there will be these shortages that we can, if we are prepared, like both of these two fine gentlemen are talking about, we'll be able to ride that out easier than others will. And so I'm curious, given both of you guys, if you could both speak to this, given the wide spectrum of tasks, education that you would need for different specialties and the like, it can be a rabbit hole. How would you tell folks to get started with this? What would be the first most basic thing that folks would need to know? And then I guess just we can work from there, but there are going to be a lot of people here who don't even know where to begin. And I don't want them to think that they need to go and, you know, invest in a $10,000 water filtration system. I've seen it. And then it's just going to end up not working because the power doesn't work. So, I mean, take it away.
The first thing I would say is your network, the people you know, and also the location in which you desire to live in the next couple of years to next couple of decades. I think it's pretty much assured now that within about 5 to 10 years, anyone still in the cities will be fully locked into the globalist, if it still survives, which, I mean, there's a small percent chance that it breaks down within that time. But I believe in about 5 to 10 years' time, it will still be in place. Anyone still in the cities will have to live, you know, they will have to eat the bugs, they will have to live in the pods. Yeah, it's not, I mean, it's, it sounds like a joke, but you know, it's becoming reality day by day in real time. I believe that moving out to rurality, and you kind of, people think it's like, oh, if I escape into rurality, what about my job, what about my income? If secondly comes in income, the ability to work anywhere and earn money, it's unfortunately the way of the world at the minute. You know, money, obviously, money is the root of all evil. However, it is still a necessity for our people to survive. And I believe that there are, thanks to the pandemic, there now are numerous opportunities to work from home, income from anywhere. You can also get creative. So there's items such as affiliate marketing. You can do e-commerce, Amazon FBA. There are huge means of earning vast amounts of wealth, even in investing in crypto, through DeFi staking, decentralized finance staking. There are abilities and ways, if you get on early enough on certain microcap coins with huge promises, that you can just live simply off the interest through DeFi staking. I know it sounds complicated, but please, I assure anyone to look into these items. There are numerous people on YouTube, free resources, fully available to anyone to find, where you can earn monthly income for doing absolutely nothing. And you can escape into rurality. And you, with a network of people, like-minded people, you can find through, say, if you attended PA events or PA conference and you met up with people and you agree, yeah, something's got to be done. I hate living in the city. I hate the fear of walking down my road and getting acid thrown in my face. You know, I hate walking down and seeing gay pride flags all along the road. I hate walking down the road and seeing just the mess of Weimar 2.0. Please, can we just escape to the country? And you can go, 5 or 6 people, yeah, of course. Why don't we all put on our last savings together? And why don't we put a deposit down for a house or a piece of land? We can get to work. I know it sounds unfathomable or unreasonable, but this really is, when we talk of prepping, it's not just about food and water and medicinal supplies. It's also about hedging a long-term place for you to survive in the future. And I believe that people get blackpilled. Again, I was talking about people getting blackpilled. There's no way to win. There's absolutely a way to win. All we have to do is just ride the tiger and write. All we have to do is outlast the liberal system. The liberal system is, without question, doomed to collapse. There's no way the system they're trying to implement, the fourth industrial revolution, when the plebs finally realize, when these liberal cucks finally realize what's coming to them, and when the whole system comes collapsing down, I'm not going to say it's happening in the next 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, even 50 years, but when it finally does happen, if independent nationalists who get to work now, prepping now, go into rurality and build communities from scratch organically, then I believe we can win, because we'll have the alternative, the patriotic alternative.
Yes, perfectly done. Well, I've got a slightly different take from Harry on this, and I think it behooves us to imagine that the system is not going to collapse, and this being prepared is going to involve being prepared for the system to carry on harassing you and looking over your shoulder, and you existing within the system whilst trying to make yourself as ungovernable as possible and insulating yourself from it. I think we imagine when we talk about prepping and kind of this idea of collapse is that everything's going to go away and there's going to be no law and no police and no anything, and it's just going to be up to you to survive. But I think it's more realistic to imagine that these things are going to grind on and not look forward to a day where it all grinds to a halt and you're suddenly going to be free. I mean, in a way, we're yoked to the system, like Jason said. You do rely on the system for a lot of stuff, and to imagine that you could survive completely isolated and completely off grid is, I think, is slightly not delusional, but it might be fanciful, let's say. So the idea is to make yourself as insulated as possible, and to make sure that they can have as little effect on you as possible, and whilst also staying within the law and trying to keep your head down. And I know that sounds like a bit of a cop-out, but that's the reality most of us are living in now. And it doesn't take away from the idea of being prepared for things going wrong, but it just means that you're going to be in a headset where you're going to be in a mindset where you are actually already geared up towards some eventuality that, you know, may or may not happen. The second thing I'll say to Jason's immediate question is where people can get started is physical books. I mean, you can do absolutely nothing, but you're going to be in just such a better position if things do go wrong, or if the power does go out, or a natural disaster, anything, if you've got a bookshelf full of books. And let me explain why. There's a few reasons. The first is that it doesn't require you to do much in the immediate, in the short term. You can go on Amazon, you can research online for half an hour, you can do your online order, get your little dopamine hit when the thing comes through the post. I know that's what internet shopping does. You know, we've been taught, and that's how we feel now every time we make that click. I know that you all know what I'm talking about. I'm sure some of the females know better than the guys, but nevertheless, it's true. You can stockpile them. You can put them away somewhere just for a rainy day if something does happen. The second thing I'll say is, and anyone who's been in forces might know this, is that boredom is a real thing, okay? And I know for a lot of us, we've got our heads down on our phones a lot of the time. We've got that computer at our fingertips. We can just pick it up. There's something else going on. Some Telegram channels posted the latest outrage video, or some Australian politician going nuts on the lockdown, and it's all very interesting. But if you take all that stuff away, you're going to be very bored. And you know, you may look at a bookshelf full of survival books and think, I'm never going to read those. Well, guess what? You know, if the power goes out and you've got nothing else to do, you are going to read those, and you're going to increase your knowledge base as you do. So quintessentially, if I could give any person here one immediate, you know, recommendation, it would be physical books. And I'll leave it there.
So you say physical books. Do you guys have any suggestions for tools? Because I've seen a lot of people tonight in the chat saying things like, what about wind-up torches? You mentioned candles. Are the things that you have which you would class as hardware? Because obviously when people say prepping, as I said, they think these underground bunkers full of food. And obviously in the US, they think about guns and munitions, etc. Obviously, firearms are strictly controlled in the UK. But what do you guys have in terms of hardware, and what would you say are the most important things you would put? Say you were to fill a backpack, not with food, not with water, but with hardware, what would you fill it with?
Torches and batteries are essential, I believe. Lots of stuff.
What about a wind-up torch? Are they any good?
They're not as powerful, to be fair. You can get like a small beam come out, but no, I believe you can get a... fairly cheap torches. I mean, obviously you're supporting the global system, but it's going to carry on ticking regardless whether you buy a torch or not. But so that you can get lots of batteries. People always rate Duracell. I don't really rate Duracell, to be fair. I've been playing the old Xbox recently, and Duracells run out about, you know, 5-6 hours of playtime, whereas you get the cheap ones from Aldi, cheaper ones, you'd expect them to last like 1-2 hours. They last easily 12-13 hours. So there's a pro tip for you. Avoid Duracell. But, you know, the essential crafty handsman toolbox, old hammer, chisel, not hammer and sickle, hammer, chisel, the usual.
Well, I would simplify that, you know, immensely and say, again, to try and entry level here would be a Leatherman, and, you know, maybe not a cheap one and maybe not a really expensive one, but the kind of multi-tool that has a pair of pliers and a little blade, something you can cut string with, something you could, you know, open a can with, very, very simple stuff. Obviously, a good knife is essential. I know there's certain laws about the types of knives and blade lengths you can have in this country, but a blade any time, anywhere is a good idea. And if you imagine, I mean, this country does not have vast amounts of open places that are going to require things like hatchets and handsaws and stuff like this. You've got to remember, I mean, this is an island 800 miles long, and there's buildings everywhere. So rather than think about you disappearing into the wilderness somewhere, think about what would be useful to get into a locked door, maybe a pry bar or a hammer or something like that. I know it's, you know, I'm not saying you have to break the law and do these things, but there are certain mindsets that you would need where you have to take yourself out of this idea of wild camping and getting into nature. I think it'd be much more useful if you came across an empty house and you were looking for something to be able to break in, even if it was just for shelter or a barn or whatever. And in that case, a small pry bar or even a Leatherman, he probably has a Phillips head screwdriver you could take some hinges off or something like that. So very, very basically, and first thing first would be a Leatherman to me.
So do you guys want to wrap up? Is there anything left to say about this before we talk a little bit about the Afghanistan fiasco?
Harry, do you want to go first?
Yeah, sure. Just staying physically fit. I think another thing for prepping is getting, if you're not already preparing physically, in terms of your fitness, for your longevity, just for your general health, it's something that I recommend for any nationalist, making sure you can run at least 10K, making sure you can bench your own body weight, making sure you can do several press-ups. I'd recommend a challenge for anyone. If you want to see if you're tough enough to survive the current age, challenge yourself to do 500 press-ups. I challenge everyone watching this tomorrow to do 500 press-ups tomorrow, not 200, not 300, not 379 and quit, not 499 and quit. I challenge everyone to do 500 press-ups. If you complete those 500 press-ups, you are genuinely a tough person. I genuinely believe that you have the will to survive the current age. And it is tough. You will get to 300. Your arms, your triceps, your ligaments, your tendons, they will start giving way. But I guarantee if you do 500 press-ups, you will feel you'll be jumping. You know, I remember when I did, I was punching through the air. You know, you're pumped up. You know, finally did it. 500's a big achievement. So just
what
set yourself.
What sets did you do? How many press-ups per set?
500 sets of one. 20. He did.
Yeah.
500 sets of one.
No, I just do sets of 20. So it'd be like you play. So honestly, you can do it if you've got nothing. You're day of work or something. You're getting a warm up for the Warzone PA Warzone tournament. Play a game. Right. 20 press-ups or I die, 20 press-ups, right, I died again, 20 press-ups. Even, you know, during work, even if people might think you're crazy, you know, you're on the job, you know, maybe you're in the office and then, you know, you're going through accounts for Shlomo and then suddenly just drop down, do 20 press-ups. But honestly, I challenge everyone, 500. And you're collapsing at 80, at least 80 is better than nothing.
Well, when I was in my 30s and I was far fitter than I am now, I set myself a similar task, but it was 1,000 and I did them in sets of 100. The most I could do in one single set was 100. But by the end of the day, I will admit my sets dropped to maybe 50 at the lowest, because you really, really start to feel you really, really start to feel it after a while. But that is an excellent tip. stuff you can do at home like that is fantastic. You can do that with sit-ups. You can do that with push-ups. You can do it with all sorts of things. I do 7-minute abs in the morning. That's a pretty good one as well. But yeah, I did 1,000 in a day, and I'd start with sets of 100. The most I could do in one go, well, I could have probably done 102 if I really had to, but the most I did in one set in a go was 100. You can get to it. You just have to build up. And you don't have to be a big guy as well to be physically fit and strong like that. A lot of guys you see at the gym who are the really big guys, they're not lifting a huge amount of weight because a lot of them, they're taking a large amount of creatine, they're taking a lot of steroids, and their muscle isn't actually muscle. A lot of it will actually be water retention or water trapped in the muscle, because that's one thing that creatine does. It increases your size, but it increases the amount of fluid held in the muscle. So unfortunately, if you are doing that kind of stuff, I don't recommend it. And if you are using creatine, this is a top tip, don't use it too often. I started using creatine, and then when I started running, my legs would seize up because the amount of water that in my leg muscles that was being pumped to my leg muscles, a horrible feeling, and my feet would go all tingly. I came off the cycle of creatine and I could run again. So if I'm doing a cardio activity, I'll lay off the creatine. And if I'm not doing as much cardio, I'll use creatine again for a little bit of a boost at the gym, because it gives you sort of somewhere between a 10 and 20% boost with your lifts. Natty, what's your final big bit of advice? Is it also physical fitness, or is there some other key to your, because you're a fit guy, I've got to say, we've met before, you're in fantastic shape.
Yeah, definitely physical fitness. It's the cornerstone of everything else. Everything else becomes much harder. You know, all of this stuff just becomes infinitely harder if you're a slob, if you're out of shape. And I know that some people have, you know, conditions and they can't get in shape for whatever reason, but there's the baseline of fitness. And I think Harry's challenge is certainly a good one. Although it's quite tough, but it's doable. You could certainly build up to that. I can't remember what your old recommendation was, Harry. You said if you can run 5K. No. I think it was 5K.
Yeah, five, yeah. Originally, minutes, yeah.
50 press-ups, yeah. And 50 sit-ups or something like that. So yeah. Obviously you've been building up as well. But there's a baseline fitness that makes everything else, you know, much easier, or to reverse it will make everything much harder if you're not there. So definitely physical fitness. The last thing I'll say is, before I joined the army, I got told at a recruiting office, why don't you do some runs and do some physical training, and then when you get to phase one, you'll be in, you know, good shape to do it. Nothing, and I anyone who's been through phase one training, probably not so much the Navy or the Air Force, isn't really prepared for the amount of physical training you have to go through. And I would kind of analogize that to a situation where, you know, possibly we do have to, the power does go out. All of these tips are good, and it's good to kind of get into a mindset. But if something bad happens, you may not be prepared, and it's going to be a massive shock. So just to start thinking about something that could happen, or just, at the back of your mind, maybe keep it in mind that it could be a real shock. And if people suffer and things that you never see before start happening in your community, it's going to be tough. So stay in good shape, prepare in any small way you can, buy books, buy physical books. Oh, that was the other point I was going to say. We know that the system now has the ability to reach back in time, as they did in a crude manner in 1984, and change history. This is why keeping the community is a very good idea. This is why physical books are such a good idea. If you look, you'll see numerous examples where Wikipedia has been changed. Newspapers have the ability to go back and change articles on the fly. They've printed something that's, you know, non-kosher, that was 5 years ago and isn't now. They can reach back and change it. So just, you know, and it speaks to a bigger issue of the fact that we're no longer connected to our ancestors, and our time horizons into the future have shrunk. So physical books, yeah, physical books, definitely. The system can't change them.
I agree with everything you guys have said. And I just want to add something. I'm getting on a bit now. I'm 41 this year. And I don't feel 41. If you asked me how old I was, I still feel like I'm in my 20s. I'd say I feel sort of 28, 29. That's how old I feel, but I am 41. And I've noticed that certain things with my physical fitness have decreased a little. I'm not as fast as I used to be. You seem to lose your speed, but I'm still lifting as much as I was at the gym. And that's good. You can keep up your strength, but your speed will decline a little bit. But if you start from a better base, so if you start getting fit when you're young, when you hit my age, it won't be that big of a problem. And I went to a camp recently, and people have seen pictures of me there. I'm not in bad shape, but that's because I started young and I stuck to it. And my big advice is, if you're going to get prepped for the future, do yourself a favor. Hoard your tins, but stay off the tinnies. Don't be smoking. You know, learn how to make a fire, but don't be smoking. You know, don't be taking drugs. You know, stockpile medicine, but don't be taking recreational drugs. Stay away from drink. Stay away from drugs. Stay away from smoking. Get yourself fit and healthy and be the best you can when you're young. And then when you hit my age, you're not going to hit that wall. Because I know guys who have been a bit unfit in their 30s, and this happens to women as well, and they hit 40 and all of a sudden, boom, they've got a pot belly. They look like total rubbish. And that's it. It's over. And then they say, oh, I've got to get rid of this belly. But they've never done anything in their life. They've never done any fitness. And then it's not just maintaining something you've done. It's not just maintaining a healthy routine. The problem you face then is like climbing Mount Everest. Getting fit in your 20s is easy. Getting fit in your 30s, it's doable. Getting fit in your 40s is pretty tough. And getting fit 50 or older, virtually impossible. But if you've got fit in your teens and your 20s, maintaining that throughout your life is dead easy. It's not difficult to maintain. And by the way, yes, I really did do 1,000 push-ups in a day, but I'll tell you this, if there's one thing I have never done, and this will cause some mocking, I'm sure, I've never done leg day at the gym, because I started doing leg day and really pumping the leg weights, and it actually stopped me from running. It made my calves so sore that I couldn't run. And I could feel myself losing speed. So I've always missed leg day at the gym. And instead, I used to do spinning classes, 10K and 5K runs, depending on the day. And obviously, also, I play a bit of squash now, and I used to do boxing training. All these things are very, very important. And, you know, when it comes down to it, start now. Start now with the prepping. Start now with the knowledge. Start now getting your tools ready. But start now on your physical fitness as well, because it'll stand you in good stead. Now, has anyone got anything to add on any of that before we talk a bit of Afghanistan, before we dive into these super chats?
I'll just add really quickly that as an American, I want to know what I do with my pig that I ran down with my bayonet.
God, not that again. Not that again. He's not coming back on the show. He's not coming back on the show. Us pig-catching Europeans without our culture. Well, I'll tell you this. I think European culture is the greatest thing to ever, ever visit planet Earth. So anyway, let's do a little bit of Afghan talk. So we all know it has been a complete failure. I'm doing a video on it with all the facts. You know, 2.26 trillion spent, 113 billion on police forces, security services, and an army that threw their guns down and ran off at the first sign of the Taliban, or joined the Taliban, or gave them the guns and munitions. So basically, all the guns and munitions America supplied to the Afghan army are now in the hands of the Taliban. They're probably the best armed band of goat herders the world has ever seen. And obviously, what is the fallout for this? And you know, we could talk all night on the fact that the Afghan war was a disaster, but as nationalists, we're against foreign intervention. I never wanted British troops in Afghanistan. I've always been for their withdrawal. They should never have been sent there in the first place. But here we see Boris Johnson pledging to fast track 25,000 Afghans to the UK. 25,000. And that's the ones on Fast Track. That doesn't mention the ones that will be coming over in dinghies. That doesn't mention the ones that will be hiding on rail cars in the Channel Tunnel. That doesn't mention the ones that will be sneaking in the backs of cars or the backs of lorries. It doesn't mention the ones that will apply through the regular asylum system. That's 25,000 Afghans coming to Britain. And this is from a Conservative government that pledged they were going to get this under control. And many people voted for them because of this. Boris Johnson, total traitor, total charlatan, absolute backstabbing, anti-white monstrosity. But Natty and Harry, what do you think to this? And what's your take on this latest act of Conservative treachery?
I personally, it boils my blood in the same way that it probably boils the blood of everyone listening and everyone who's been following the news cycle over the last couple of days. The stated reason for Afghanistan was to, you know, take the war on terror over there and make sure they didn't have a springboard to launch terror attacks. Well, as I alluded to earlier, the only reason why anyone from Afghanistan would be in this country in any numbers great enough to lose track of and to be able to plan attacks and carry out attacks in this country is because of the two-party system, either the Labour Party or the Conservative Party, letting these people in numbers, you know, 20, 25,000, it's like a drop in the ocean compared to what these people have already done. We would not need to be taking in refugees. This is just Hegelian dialect 101, you know. Oh, look, we've created all these refugees in Afghanistan with our actions over there. Now we need to take them in. Well, why were you over there? To stop them launching terror attacks in our country. Well, how are they going to do that? Well, we let them in the first place. You know, this is what I mean. We need long memories. We need to be able to remember the past and why these groups of absolute scumbags who get up there in Parliament and try and decide who's gonna take in the most refugees, in air quotes, from Afghanistan. And on one hand, you've got Boris Johnson saying, we're going to take in 25,000. And the alternative that you can vote for, Keir Six-Pointed Starmer, is saying, and that doesn't go far enough. We should be taking many, many more. And that's only in the first year. Well, I would say this. If there are people fleeing Afghanistan right now, if, say, a couple of hundred manage to get onto planes, get into the British embassy or the American embassy and flee to some country that they didn't belong to, well, fine. But the idea of resettling thousands and thousands of these people after the Taliban have now just established a government in that country is absolutely insane. And let's not forget, there are, I don't know, tens of countries in between Afghanistan and Europe, the edges of Europe, Turkey, Israel might be a good place where these guys could stop and, you know, sling their picks. I mean, Jesus Christ, why is it our responsibility? Because of the people in charge who started a war or who joined in a war over there for no good reason. It's unbelievable. These people need to be called out. They've got complete control of every narrative. And it, do not despair, because I feel like millions of our countrymen probably feel the same way as us and are as outraged and as peed off as we are. This ridiculous situation, this ridiculous argument going on in the halls of power that none of us ever agreed to. We were never asked.
Oh, mate, it's a pleasure to have you back, Natty. It's a pleasure. You're coming back on again, you are. I'm dragging you back onto more shows. Harry, have you got any takes on this before I share with you all the most enraging piece of news that I have seen over the last couple of days?
Well, it's just incredible, isn't it? Like, we live in the most incredible democracy ever, where on one side, you've got, oh, yes, we're going to pledge to take in 25,000 refugees. And on the other side, yeah, it's like, oh, we need even more. It's like, oh, sign me up. What an incredible democracy. Where you've got a choice to completely reject it. It's just amazing. And then if you try and create an alternative party, the Electoral Commission will just say, oh, excuse me, sorry, there's that tick on your logo is one pixel too big. Do you mind changing that a bit? Oh, sorry, the E is, the font's a bit too, do you mind changing that? It gets to 2066, and sorry, the name needs a bit of changing, then you're a minority in your country. So, oh, what an incredible, incredible spiffing democracy we have. And again, there's you try and create another party, and you're shut down, you're demonized in the media. And it's not just about the current political system we have. It's about who controls the means of information. And you look at the free press, so to speak. You look at how they smear anyone that opposes immigration. You look at social media platforms that ban people who have an alternative opinion. I mean, what much is there to say? I mean, the country is just going to carry on getting flooded and flooded. And, you know, it's not really going to end well. The most shocking thing is you think there'd be a public backlash, but unfortunately not really. You see a lot of the comments on a lot of these Facebook posts, a lot of these Twitter threads. And I think I saw one today. The most stunning one I saw today was, I'd rather have a refugee than a racist live next door to me. It's like, oh, yeah. Well, I hope a refugee moves in next door to you. I really do. You know, I'm sure you'll have a wonderful time with them.
And to point out as well that the refugee is probably racist, more racist than any of your fellow countrymen could ever be. And there you are saying, I'd rather have a refugee than a racist. It's insane. These people are nuts.
They are nuts, my friend. And we've got one last bit of news before we do the Super Chats. This is from our friendly fellow whites. They are making a statement. World Jewish Relief says it will try to help those fleeing Afghanistan, while JCOR urges the government to lay down a clear plan of action. Well, that's a typo in the headline. And then it says a leading Jewish humanitarian charity has urged Britain to commit to a sizable resettlement program of Afghan refugees fleeing the Islamist Taliban. So there are our fellow white friends who are interestingly calling for these people to come for the UK, but strangely not Israel. Have we seen this before, guys? Because it seems like there's a lot of coincidences, a lot of things that just keep happening again and again here.
It really is baffling, isn't it?
It's baffling. Guys, take off your tinfoil hat. It's all just a coincidence. I don't know what you guys are thinking. Come on, this is an isolated case. Didn't you know that our fellow whites have their own internal splits between left wing and right wing, and we should support the right wing ones? Oh, it's, you know, they're based and red pilled, and you know we should love these people and accept them into all of our movements. No, absolutely not. It's insane. Of course, this is pattern recognition 101. When you see these NGOs asking for the same thing, every single event that happens in the world somehow has to end up with refugees, in air quotes again, coming into Europe. And who's leading the charge every time? It's these NGOs from a certain country in the Middle East that, you know, again, ironically, will never take these people into their own borders, who will never open their own borders, who have border walls that are, you know, make Trump's idea look like child's play. It's insane. A living, breathing ethno state. The one thing that is off the table for anyone else in the world, and these people have it for themselves. Absolutely insane. The hypocrisy is enough to make you blush.
Well, thank you for that. That was an excellent take. We now have the Super Chats, and we will go through these. If you haven't Super Chatted tonight, there is still 52 minutes left to Super Chat or ask a question. The link, I think Laura will be putting that in the DLive chat now. And if you're watching on Odyssey, the link is in the description beneath the video. So without further ado, let's read some of these very generous Super Chats. The first is from the wonderful Aunt Sally, a member of our excellent book club. Thank you so much, Sally. She said, it would be wonderful to see you get a wave of £3 donations. And then she put a little heart. Thank you so much, Sally. The wonderful Keribu gave £3 as well. Thank you so much. And said, great to have Harry and Natty back on, joining in with Aunt Sally's £3 wave. Thank you so much to the lovely Keribu. Bailiff Basher gave $25. Thank you so much, my friend. A generous donation. Always good to see you here. And he says, question for Mark. I see that Devon and Cornwall police, after finding a picture of Donald Trump on the Plymouth shooter Jake Davison's social media account, are now keeping the status of the incident as non-terror related under continual review. Do you think they are desperate to politicize this? Yes, I do. they've done everything they can to politicize the Plymouth shooting already. I've seen all of these hack journalists and supposed experts on GMTV and all these other chat shows in the mornings and talking head shows talking about the problem of incels. Well, the problem we've got in this country isn't a problem with incels. There isn't an incel problem. There is a problem that is anti-white. There is an anti-white, anti-male rhetoric being pushed by the powers that be that alienate young white men and make young white men angry. And it leads to things like this. This is a problem created by a system that hates white men. They have created this problem and they should take it on the chin and admit what they've done. And one of the great things about PA is we are one of the few organizations that pushes back against this. We get young men together, whether it be for fitness, whether it be for gaming, whether it be for movie nights, whether it be for hikes, camping, whether it be for political activism, just a night out with friends. The other Saturday night, myself and Laura and a small PA group went out for a meal at my favorite restaurant. Absolutely fantastic night. We get young people out. We give young people hope. And it is the system that has been taking hope away from young people. So my take on this is on the system. This is on the people peddling this anti-male, anti-white hate, because that's what it is. It's hate. Do either of you guys, Harry or Natty, want to say anything about the issue of the shooting?
Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a despicable act. Killed a five-year-old, killed his mother, killed a few others, I believe. You know, despicable, horrible act. And I completely condemn it. But again, as you said, it's just a well, obviously it's a travesty, but the system is so geared against young men and so geared against white people that some people feel so alienated and some people feel so frustrated they feel that they have no other option but to lash out. And so many people have no hope. I mean, what hope is there for young people now? Not being able to afford a house, not being able to have a good career. There's so much competition for jobs. There seems to be no meaning. There's no cohesive culture. Obviously, if you're white, your privilege points, your social credit score is obviously diminished from the get-go. And you look at, I mean, even on, I believe it was Good Morning Britain, one of these ICV, you know, government propaganda outlets, coming out, some woman said, oh, yes, language to recognize. If they say things like cucked, or if they say things like based, or red-pilled, or black-pilled, then you must call counter-terrorism to kick your door down. It's just ridiculous. And these people clearly have
so basically, you've just got our doors kicked in, Harry.
Oh, yeah.
You've said all the buzzwords in a row.
Yeah, yeah. All the red flags going off in GCHQ right now. It's just unbelievable because these people are so clueless. You've got all these people paid. If you're going to pay someone like me to research everything, I'll do 100 times better job. These people are so clueless with how it actually operates. They're about 20 years behind the movement. And these people come on experts and you get all these normies. Again, I said a buzzword there. Going to trigger some. But the thing, yeah, you say these words and these people are just so clueless and they think they're experts, but they've got no clue how young people actually feel. They've got no clue how white people actually feel in this country now. But the further they push, then unfortunately more of these random incidents of violences are going to occur. And obviously I condemn them, but I mean, the more you push, then the more these things are just going to happen. It's just a consequence of your anti-white hate, as you said.
Any takes from you, Natty?
Well, obviously, it's a horrible thing that happened, and the buck stops at this guy who did it. It's a monstrous thing, and there's no sympathy for this action whatsoever. Absolutely crazy. And you guys have made a good point of pointing out the cancerous modern world that produces people like that, and certainly has done in America, and we may see more of the same thing. I hope not, but. Given the lack of spirituality and the lack of hope that people feel, it wouldn't, as horrible as it is to say, it wouldn't surprise me if we saw more of the same. But one of the things pulling back from, trying to see the large picture is the system has been given a free hand to push whatever narrative they want. all the usual pushback you would get from people like us or sensible people on the right, you know, even if they were the kind of soft right or center right or whatever, has been completely steamrolled. And one of the things to take note of is that as time goes on, the system gets just more and more efficient at this because there's less and less people. Twitter narratives become the norm. I mean, this woman who went on Good Morning Britain and was tripping over how to say cuck and normie and red pill and all the rest of it sounded like a complete goon. She would have had a big Twitter account, probably a blue check mark, would never have been counted on anything, even though she knows it exists out there, you know, because the ability of these people to just silence and shut people down who are actual political dissidents has become insane. I mean, if you were to look at the situation now, 10 years ago, whether it was COVID or whether it was narrative control, you'd be shocked. And that's where we are. And we kind of can't see it because we're inside the bowl, but it's insane. And these people's grip on the narrative is going to become more and more pervasive, more and more overbearing.
I agree. We'll go on to the next super chat. We have a $5 super chat from Gus in Lanzarote. Hello, Gus. Good to see you back. And he said, people moan that we won't win as all the big money, Google, Soros, Gates, etc. is against us. Yet the UK spent trillions in Afghanistan and a few guys in pickup trucks with AK-47s beat them. A good sign for our impoverished movement. I think it is a good sign for the movement. And I'll tell you something. The reason the Taliban won wasn't because they were better armed. It wasn't because they were better trained. It was because they were radical. They believed in something. They held on to the belief always that they were going to win. And I always give that quote, only he is lost who gives himself up for lost. They always held on to the belief that they were going to win. And I've got to say this for them. I'm not a supporter of what they believe in, but there must have been dark times for those guys. They were there under siege, living in caves for 2 decades, living in caves, run out of their cities, run out of their towns, away from their religious buildings, away from their families, living in caves for 2 whole decades. That's a long time. I mean, we were talking here about what it would be like to have a bit of a supply chain break for 3 months. Well, think about 2 decades living in a cave. They did it, and they emerged from those caves, and in days of emerging from those caves, they took back their entire country. And I said their entire country because it is their country. And something else I'll say is, despite that $113 billion spent on an Afghan army, an Afghan police force, and Afghan security services, I think it was $86 billion on the army alone, that army, when they saw those men emerge from those caves, handed over their weapons with barely a shot fired and fled or joined the men coming out of the caves. That's all down to 2 things. Firstly, hope and belief that you can do something. And secondly, determination. They were determined. They believed in something and they always, always held on to hope. And they just beat, with AK-47s and pickup trucks, the world's foremost superpower. And that is something that you can take hope from. Doesn't mean you have to agree with them. Doesn't mean you have to believe in what they believe. It doesn't mean you have to want to oppress women. It doesn't mean that you want Sharia law. But you can learn something from the fact that a small, radical bunch of dedicated people who held on to hope overcame those odds. And I've got to say this to people in the chat tonight and to people on this panel. If somebody asked you, would you be willing to live in a cave for 2 decades? If it meant that you would have a chance of emerging victorious and seeing Britain restored to a place where white people would always be a super majority and our culture and traditions were at the top of the tree, that it was genuinely Britain for the British, it was England first, it was Scotland first, it was Wales first. Would you be willing to do that? Because those guys were. And for their dedication, I can't knock them. Serena JB gave £5. Thank you so much, Serena. Lovely to see you here tonight. And she said, as the world gets increasingly incomprehensible, thanks to all of you for keeping us sane and grounded. Thank you so much. Ian Holloway gave £14. Thank you so much, Ian. And he said, my first super chat, just want to say thanks for all your hard work. Well, thank you so much, Ian. It's great to see you here tonight. JP gave $10, and it's a question for Jason. Jason, the Kyle, thank you so much, Jay. And it's a question for Jason. I said, and he says, the Kyle Rittenhouse trial is 3 months away. Do you think the case will set a precedent not only for not only the Second Amendment, but also the rights of whites to act in self-defense in the United States? As always, love the show. Keep doing God's work. Well, thank you so much, JP. Jason, do you have an answer for the man?
Well, I don't know that if certainly the anti-whites, and thank you very much, JP, it's wonderful, gentlemen. The anti-whites are obviously going to use everything that they can, even when it's something that's carried out by an anti-white, to inflict injury on Western kind and Western civilization. And removing the right to self-defense is something that they clearly want to do in the United States, as they've done elsewhere, because it's a lot easier to manipulate a population when they can't defend themselves. Which is not to say that the United States population would be able to defend itself against the United States military. That's not how it would ever go down, and certainly not how the founding fathers foresaw something, a conflict like that, ever going down. But nonetheless, they're going to use the Kyle Rittenhouse case and any other case that comes their way to advance their agenda. And it's always an incremental agenda in the United States against the right to self-defense, because a full frontal assault, to sort of throw a whole pun of a sentence in there, the full frontal assault on the Second Amendment of the United States always draws too many victims out of the woodwork, people who would be victimized, and that includes non-white people who love the right to self-defense. And they all come forward. They come forward with their dollars. They come forward with their voices. They come out into the streets. So instead, they'll use this, as they have in the past, to advance an incremental step toward disarming people. And that can take many, many different forms. It can be with licensure. It can be with taxation on the tools themselves, guns, firearms, ammo, all of that sort of thing, without question. I don't foresee, though, some sort of attempt to rewrite the Constitution as in the Second Amendment as it is. Although I will say this, the United States government is getting increasingly dumber because of course, hiring people on the basis of their race and sex, or lack of a sex, or whatever they are these days, or imaginary sex. And as a consequence, instead of having people being hired because they are intelligent enough to get the job done for those who have the power to demand that the job get done, they have people in positions that are really quite stupid. And so they may try to go with a full frontal assault on the Second Amendment, and they'll be defeated if they do, at least for now. You all are talking about, and I'll just toss this in, and we keep rolling, talking about the UK at 2066 or whatever it is, and whites will be a numerical minority. I predict, based on the census in the United States for the past 10 years, 2010 to 2020, that the United States white population will be a numerical minority, 49% or lower by 2030. And everyone that I've talked to about this sees that as a conservative likelihood. So it's not something that the United States is looking at in the distance, but it is something indeed that we're looking at in the short term. I'll pass it back.
Well, thank you very much. Max Anderson said, gave £5. Thank you so much, Max. He said, I read an interesting article today that a driver for political party change was people losing their local pub. Just thought it was an interesting point I would mention. I haven't seen that, but if you want to send me the article, I'd be interesting to read it. And Max also gave another £5. Thank you so much for your generosity, and said, could you quickly run through your vetting process for IRL and your data protection policies? I will do that very quickly. We have the following vetting process. For people to be officers of the organization, they have to provide us with photo ID, a recent utility bill, and they are subject to a home visit. So anyone who is an organizer or officer of the organization has to be home visited, so we know exactly who they are, exactly where they live, We've given them the once over. We're sure they're the right caliber of person for the organization. If you want to be part of one of our vetted activists, you simply have to provide the identification, and that gets you into our vetted community groups. None of the data that we send is ever kept online or transmitted via email. We keep the data in one place, securely offline, and transmit it with end-to-end encryption and then delete it from both ends. So we stick to data protection best practice, and we ensure for the safety of our activists and supporters that anybody in a position of authority has had a home visit. So that means we know exactly who they are, we've had a good look around, and we are sure that you will be safe with them. And that also leaves us open that if anyone ever did go rogue for whatever reason, we would be in a position where, thankfully, we could take legal action against them. This is all done for people's safety and to ensure, obviously, if the state wants to infiltrate us with all their power, they will be able to infiltrate. But it stops low-level infiltration such as doxers or people like Antifa, who might be coming to meetings to disrupt things. And there is a bonus to be a vetted activist. The bonus of being a vetted activist is that you are given first refusal on things such as conference tickets, etc. This is similar to what used to happen in the British National Party. Obviously, people could join up online, but then we would have their full name and address, etc. But in Leeds BNP, which I was in, I used to be part of an outreach team, and when people joined or people inquired, we would follow up those inquiries by giving them a home visit, meeting them, shaking their hands and introducing ourselves. And again, in the British National Party, officers all got home visits as well. So we are basically following best practice with all of those things to keep people safe and to keep the organisation free from infiltration. G. White gave £10. Thank you so much, my friend. He said, lately, I see people, normies, waking up to the acceleration tactics of the globalists. I even hear some non-based folk I know using words anti-white and European natives. Honestly think we can reverse the damage before it's too late. PA will blossom from their contributions to protect our own. Thank you so much for those kind words, my friend. Old Mother Earth gave $3. Thank you so much, and said, if internet and mobile phone goes down, one of my survival buys was a few old style plug-in phones that run from home phone lines. If the electricity goes, your cordless phone will stop working. That's a very good point. Phone lines would work without electricity, I believe. And also another thing, if we're really going to do this at some point, we are going to have to move to a place where we are geographically close to one another, where we are all just a few doors down. This could be done quite easily with newer states up north. We could all do that, and it would be absolutely fantastic. Alex May gave £3. Thank you so much, and said, wave to PA. Best way to prep, club together and buy land. Excellent point. Thank you for your generosity.
Just to add a quick point. I work on a statistical regression model at the minute, which is going to be complete soon, hopefully, of the cheapest places to live correlated with a percent white British. So I'm sure I'll put that up somewhere when it's complete. Well, obviously, I'll maybe not make it fully public. So, you know, Shlomo can build a load of tower blocks and put a load of Afghans there. But something like that may be useful in the future.
Well, thank you so much. White Butterfly gave £3. Thank you so much, Jody. And she said, sending a wave to everyone. Thank you. Cyborg gave £5. Thank you so much, my friend. He said, come on, folks. Everyone should be looking to donate at least £3 a week to the cause. Thank you, my friend. David Peterson, who has been very, very generous tonight. Thank you so much, David. He gave £10 and said, when will the nuclear holocaust happen? I'm not sure on that one, David. He gave another £10. Thank you so much, and said, should I move to Wales? It's a silly place, so no one would want to bomb it. Thank you again, David. And he gave another £10. Thank you so much, my friend. He said, when will Natty start doing his own show again? That's the question of the night, Natty. When will you commit to a weekly show?
At the moment, I don't have the time. I would love to do it. I mean, obviously, the show that me and Charlie used to do with the other host, that was a lot of fun. And obviously, I think it ran its course. A lot of the time, you know, a lot of the content creators, I know that Harry's talked about this. I know that Dan from the Iconoclast talked about this. You kind of run out of things to say. We see the same cycles of things happening over and over again, and it just becomes, you know, too much to take and you get into a bit of a rut. But I would certainly like to in the future. I don't know when that will be, so I can't promise anything. But if it's possible, then I'll definitely be doing it. So, you know, watch this space. I would like to. That's my short answer.
I would like you to as well, Natty. You're very, very entertaining, and also you're very well spoken. The things you've said tonight have really made me smile. I've got a great reception from the audience too. It really is a pleasure having you back, mate. Colin of Kent gave £10. Thank you so much, my friend. He says, I've put weights around the house. When I put the kettle on, brush my teeth, or even sit on the toilet, there's a piece of exercise apparatus next to it. That is a very good idea. And that goes into what Harry was saying, what I was saying. If you set yourself little targets through the day, you can do it. I used to play a game called Monster Hunter, and between each quest, I would always do 25 push-ups. That was one of my routines. And Harry said he does something similar with Warzone. So it is doable.
I'd just say, set yourself an impossible task. Like, a lot of people get into the rut of, I'm going to go to the gym, I'm going to wear my Gymshark, then I'm going to do 10 by 10, then 12 by 12, then I'm going to have 1 minute rest between the sets. So what do you think European Warriors, I think Spartan Warriors, like, oh, I'm going to slay one guy and then, 5 minute rest, and then I'm going to track my calories. They just ate big, trained hard, slept well, and they drank loads of water. And they were just European, old school European chads. Just set yourself a mental task. You wake up one day and be like, I'm going to run 15 miles. If you get it done, then I mean, what a great achievement.
Well, thank you so much. Barclay Walsh gave $5. Thank you, Barclay. And he said, will Mark be providing keto and adrenochrome meal options at the next PA conference? And will Harry be dropping the hashtag truck pronounced True K Red Bulls on how they want you eating carbohydrates, i.e. racial and spiritual suicide that freezes your penile gland?
You should treat that super chat with all the respect it deserves, you know, all the seriousness and respect that it deserves.
So are you guys on the adrenochrome then? Have you guys talk about it a lot? Is that what you're actually doing?
No, yeah, Shlomo's given me a first rate supply.
Harry and Barclay are actually 130-year-old Rothschild family.
133,
members.
Actually.
Yeah, they look like 16-year-old, 17-year-old, 18-year-old lads.
Yeah.
By dint of their daily adrenochrome injections.
But lots of lords in the old network, you know.
Do you know what? I actually read that I was looking into the theoretical maximum age of human beings, and scientists believe there is a theoretical maximum that we can get to 150. But at that point, no matter what you've taken or what you've done, your body would basically shut down and your mind wouldn't be able to take it anymore. Any thoughts?
It's weird, huh?
The transhumanism stuff is incredible. I mean, you could do several streams just about transhumanism. And
I discussed this the other day though, Natty, and this is the problem. I've also been looking into this, and they reckon that to accurately map just a cubic centimeter of brain matter, just a cubic centimeter, so not your whole brain by a long stretch, to accurately map that to the point where you would store all the data contained in that. So they take these tiny slides of the, so they've got the cubic centimeter, and then they basically cut it like a block of cheese, but into these tiny nanometer style slides. To map that accurately and store the data in it takes more storage space than exists in the entire world.
I don't doubt that for a second. I think the human brain is probably the last refuge that these dissembling, deconstructing, you know, scumbags, demons will be able to get a grasp on. I think the idea of transhumanism, it will be like everything else, like the degradation of the West, will be a slow process. It may start with a chip in your hand, a chip and pin in your hand that you use to pay for things, and, you know, go on to ocular implants and God knows what else. I mean, this is, again, this would have sounded like tinfoil hat stuff 10, 15 years ago, but we now see mainstream adverts. I don't know if you guys saw, there was of course a Kalergi family, and the young girl's just had a chip put in, and she's like, oh mom, it's so cool, man, I get to buy things. Oh look, I can take a picture with my eyes and this nonsense. So it will be a slow process if it does happen, but it's, you know, they'll get there in the end. And I mean, if you imagine that Boston Dynamics can create robots that can jump and do all that stuff, certainly the path to synthetic arms and legs, you know, for people who have amputated limbs, that's a good thing. But there are many pitfalls, and with the rapid advancement of AI at some point reaching this singularity, transhumanism is definitely a worry, because it will just be another tool used to oppress people who don't think and talk the right way.
Even if you go on the gov.uk website, there's a document on there called Human Augmentation, the Dawn of a New Paradigm, where they talk about things like neurostimulation, 3D bioprinting, microchipping, yet somehow it's just a crazy conspiracy theory that, you know, the psychopaths that run the world want to chip everyone like the stupid pleb cattle they are.
Well, it is an interesting topic. Maybe a show on that alone would be good. A scaredy cat gave $3, thank you so much, and said, hi Mark, racing last week to end under 200 characters, I lessened water to the incomprehensible water, laughed later because both are 5. And then he puts, I can't pronounce this. Oh, phytalates in ubiquitous plastic, e.g. water bottles, lead to infertility. Well, thank you so much. British Gammon gave £25. Thank you for the generous super chat, my friend. He said, evening, gents. What does the panel think of the carnivore diet? Our ancestors would have eaten meat, mainly meat, for most of the year, as there was no fruit in winter, and modern vegetables are man-made and didn't exist. I'm not sure if hoarding rice and pasta is a good idea. Any thoughts on this? Well, my take on this is the carnivore diet. This is something I don't understand about these people who claim it's natural to eat only plants. It's absolutely not. For Europeans, definitely for the winter months, they would have only have eaten meat and any root vegetables they could find. So, but I don't think the carnivore diet is natural all year long, and it could potentially lead to scurvy, gout, and other problems. I would recommend a balanced diet focused on fresh meat, fresh vegetables, as little additives and preservatives as possible, and limited carbohydrates. What do you guys all think to that about the carnivore diet?
The only thing I know about the carnivore diet is that Jordan Peterson was on it before his brain collapsed and he forgot to clean his room. So, you know, maybe steer clear of that one.
I must say, I did try it for 2-3 weeks. So I fasted throughout the day, a whole chicken. I just ate the whole chicken to myself, steak and a few eggs. The highest tea I've ever been. I remember I was playing 6-a-side football and there was a guy repeatedly fouling me, and just completely pushed him over afterwards. It was like the third or fourth time he'd done it, completely pushed him over. But my whole team were just completely out of stamina. I was just going and going and going and going and going. And I'd recommend it, to be fair. It was probably the leanest and fittest I've ever been. But I think it was a friend that told me the other day as well that hunter-gatherers actually had larger brains than we do now. Why not give it a try? See for yourself. Yeah, it worked for me. But I just think the true Chad, omnipotent European, excellent diet is just eggs.
That's just eggs. That's,
yeah. All you got to eat is raw eggs.
Well, I think I do think you need a bit of balance. And I'll say this. I went to an all-you-can-eat meat restaurant on Saturday night, and it was an amazing night. I had so much steak. It was unreal. But anyway, we've got loads of super chats, so we're going to have to fire through these. Pleasant Pheasant Plucker gave £3. Thank you so much, my friend. He said, nationalists should buy property in some abandoned mining town and start anew. Also, have you guys seen the video of the Afghan army trying to do star jumps? I haven't. Has anyone seen this video of the Afghan army doing star jumps?
That's an old video, and it was sent around years ago. I think while I was still in the army, that was sent around, and it was very humorous watching these guys trying to do star jumps. It just, the concept of organized PT just seemed like such an alien. It just seemed like the clash of two completely alien worlds, you know, this guy and this American guy, or I can't remember, maybe he was British, and like starched combat uniform, and these Afghan guys who'd been given the uniform, they clearly did not they didn't fit the clothes. You could tell they weren't designed for it, and trying to do star jumps and they're all flopping around all over the place. They just can't follow instructions. If anything is a metaphor, if anything's a good image for the folly of going into Afghanistan with a modern Globo Homo army, it's that video of trying to make the ANA do star jumps. They probably had their mind on, you know, little boys and Bakabazi, so no wonder they couldn't do it.
Well, we'll move on from there. Red Line gave $14. Thank you so much, my friend. He says, Mark, please repeat where and when your debate with Destiny is. It is at some time on Friday evening. I think it's about 7 p.m. UK time, Friday evening, on Odyssey. But I'll be blasting out links to that beforehand. Don't worry about that. And remember, I sent a big email out last Friday about the conference in October, so please make sure you check your emails if you're signed up for that. Arcade Outpost, $5. Thank you so much, my friend. He said, for the Destiny Showdown, I want to say there is no study, statistic, or academic rabbit hole that justifies our replacement or displacement. Anti-white academic narratives are used to paint us as stupid or hateful, and we shouldn't accept their premises. I agree, and I won't be accepting them. Michael57DE gave $14. Thank you so much, my friend. He says, hail Mark, hail Natty, Harry, and America's own Jason. Hail the gods, hail our folk. 14 words. Thank you so much, my friend. A White Life gave £3. He said, great to see Harry and Natty back. Great show as always. 14. Thank you so much, my friend. Crispy Bacon gave $10. Thank you so much, my friend. He said, hi, Mark. If Beijing Biden doesn't manage to get the estimated 10,000 US citizens out of Afghanistan by the end of the month, when the last flights leave, he will resign. Well, we shall see. Red Line gave $5. Sorry?
Sorry, just one quick thing. I have seen some rumors saying apparently Biden is due. Obviously, I can't confirm this, but Biden is due to resign soon.
Not sure. I've heard those too, but I'm not sure. Somebody's asked a question about that, actually. I'm not so sure. Red Line gave $5. Thank you so much. Said, Jason, do you see the Afghanistan situation as a sign of decline of the American empire, or was it a planned operation all along?
It definitely was not a planned operation, and we shouldn't fall into the trap of looking backward and then painting a bullseye around a dart thrown onto a blank wall. It is a sign of stupidity that was present 20 years ago when the United States decided to attempt to occupy and rebuild another nation with a people that have a different biosphere than we do. The reason why it's always been impossible to conquer Afghanistan is twofold. Its rugged terrain makes it difficult to repeople that location with individuals that have a similar or identical biosphere. So it's hard to get in and out of there. And you have a people in there with a very different biosphere than our own. And then some of the others who have attempted to go into Afghanistan on a smaller level than, say, Alexander the Great, the Soviets, and the United States. But nonetheless, they and their story, and there are a couple just thoughts here, they and their story, and this is what makes them victorious always, is that they are the good guys in their story. The outsiders are the bad guys. So when the Taliban was resisting the United States, when it was resisting the Soviet Union, the towns were in favor of the Taliban. And the Taliban were not only in the caves, they were in the towns. They were in the militaries that the United States and the Soviet Union built to supposedly fight the Taliban. The reason why the military that you just watched, and despite the fact that it was so much larger than the Taliban, the military that the United States and the Allies put together to maintain their control over Afghanistan threw their weapons down is because they were already defeated in their own minds since they were playing the villain in that story. They could not fight and kill those in the story who are the heroes, who are the moral champions. For them, that is the Taliban. So that is why it's so important what story you end up living in. Are you going to be the hero in our story or the villain in someone else's? They were the hero in their story. So when the Taliban showed up at a town destitute, they couldn't grow food in caves. When they showed up at a town, the townspeople saw them as the White Hats, and they gave them all the food they needed. They gave them the information, the technology, the weapons, the intel, etc. Now, the United States, of course, made the error of going in there, and these are the anti-whites who run the United States, made the error of going in there and trying to occupy it, and that becoming a way, infinite possibilities to enrich anti-whites at the top, and at the same time to victimize Western kind and Western civilization by way of that occupation. And there was no real plan to ever situate a puppet government there. And so you had this, how long are you going to pay for it, United States taxpayer? How long are you going to fund this puppet regime in Afghanistan? And then at some point, you're not going to be able to fund it anymore. And so what will the anti-whites do? Well, they're going to retreat, as they have. And the Taliban, the good guys in their story, take back their country. The United States forces collapse there. And make no mistake, this is something that I think is really pertinent. The UK taxpayer, the United States taxpayer, they are going to be paying the Taliban to get citizens of Afghanistan to bring to the United States, to bring to the UK. Because the Taliban is not going to let them go easily. They're going to want to punish, they're going to, et cetera. So there's going to have to be big sums of money sent to the Taliban, weapons. These are the kind of things that maybe we will hear about just on the surface. But it absolutely, to the questioner's question, it absolutely is a sign of a weakening United States as a consequence of what I was talking about earlier, that people for many, many decades now have been hired on the basis of race and sex rather than on competence. And they, of course, have brought in more like themselves. And so everything has gotten dumber. But nonetheless, the thing I'll end on before I pass it back is that the United States military intelligence community is still a most powerful force. And so I would not in any way expect there to be some sort of tangible weakness vis-a-vis the populations of the West. The United States will continue to be able to be in everyone's lives and to be able to destroy people all the way around the world for beyond the expected and immediate future. But I pass it back.
Well, thank you. We've had a $3 super chat from Yiz the Eunuch. Thank you so much. And said, I made two memes Natty will appreciate. They are safe to show on stream if you like. So I will show them briefly. I will just do a quick share screen.
I had a look at those memes, and very quickly, I mean, I haven't touched on this. I know that the fall of the Globo Hobo Empire in Afghanistan is hilarious, and the fact they got defeated is, the fact that America is just in such disarray is hilarious. But I will say that people I know and people who I was connected with were killed in some pretty horrific ways by the Taliban. So I know that people have said it's basically just an Afghanistan nationalist organization. Well, I'm glad that we're not there anymore. Let's just leave it like that. I may not be as so celebratory over the Taliban, I guess, storming back in, but again, we shouldn't have been in there in the first place. So I'll leave that there. But they are good memes. They are funny memes. I'm glad the memes are getting made about this situation.
Well, thank you so much. David Peterson gave another $10. Thank you so much, my friend. He said, I think a lot of people in the UK believe in what we believe, and that's why the Electoral Commission want to shut us up. They know we could be very successful. Democracy is obviously a fraud, but how do we overcome this problem? Well, we keep trying, my friend. Michael57DE gave $10. Thank you so much. He said, Jason, love you, bro, but you're wrong. The founders explicitly believe their descendants might need to fight a future despotic government, which is specifically why they wrote the Second Amendment. After all, they just got done doing just that very thing. Do you have any response to that, Jason?
Yeah, what I was saying was they did not believe that there would be a resistance to the United States government and tyranny in the fashion that the United States was able to resist the English and the rule of the English. They foresaw in their genius, and this is the reason, I agree completely, I'm not disagreeing with the questioner's statement there, that the right to self-defense was written into the Constitution to prevent tyrants from taking all of the other rights away. The founding fathers saw that the battle between the citizenry, and this is an error that is because people look back on that period and think, well, the founding fathers of the United States meant that the citizenry would all go get in a line and then point their muskets at the United States soldiers who would be marched out there. And then that would be the battle. Because they view it like that, they end up erroneously concluding that a modern resistance to tyranny would have to be a bunch of citizens lining up against the military of the United States, which of course would mean that every citizen would be obliterated without much effort whatsoever. The resistance to tyranny with the firearm, which is the great equalizer, can manifest itself in a myriad of ways. And I'm certainly not going to spell those out for people, but there are a myriad of ways that this tool, this great equalizer, can aid those who are being oppressed when they resist efforts of a tyrant or tyrants to oppress them. It's just not going to be, and this is the takeaway, it's just not going to be a bunch of guys with Winchesters, you know, 30-06 in orange jackets heading out there to oppose the 82nd Airborne. I mean, it's just not going to take place that way. So, yes, I agree with the questioner. It is intended, the right to self-defense, the Second Amendment, is intended to prevent tyrants from dominating and taking every other right away.
Well, thank you. Stan Wong gave £14. Thank you so much, my friend. He said, how do you think this autumn is going to play out? Is Biden on his last legs and has Boris shot his last load? I don't know. I think we're going to be seeing a lot more of those two for the foreseeable future. I can't see them being pushed out. Boris has got a record majority, and the press is being very, very kind to Biden, even over this Afghanistan thing. They've called it a massive embarrassment. They've said it's a shameful moment, but they're still not going for Biden in the same way they went for Trump. I'm going to have to fly through these last couple of super chats. VB gave £10. Thank you so much, my friend. He said, great stream, lads. Big congrats to Jason for his longstanding efforts to bring the phrase anti-white into the mainstream. The New York Post used a headline this week. We should do as much as we can to encourage everyone to use the phrase. Yes, we should. We should. John Tomominari asked, what do you think about the non-Hispanic white population declining faster in the US than what was expected due to a higher number of deaths due to suicides and drug overdoses? That doesn't shock me. I think there's going to be a lot of problems in the capitalist, multiracial, globo-homo US, and it will affect different racial groups in different ways. And the more we see the glorification of drug use, the more we see the tolerance of drug use, the more it will affect young communities and the more suicides and deaths we'll see. It doesn't overly surprise me. And finally, Remember When We Chilled asked, hi, Mark, did you see Jada and Nick Griffin were trying to pin the Plymouth shooting on Patriotic Alternative and you? Yes, I did see that. And I've got to say, what a disgusting pair of lowlifes to suggest that a group and a person that does so much to get young people out and to get young people doing things in the real world, that has camps, that has hikes, that has brought people together, an organization that's having its first babies this year from people who met at our events, that we somehow promote the incel lifestyle, and we somehow drove a tragic young man to shooting other white people. These are the words of two people who are basically horrible, horrible, jealous, bitter grifters that really do nothing except for ask for donations and slag off decent nationalists. What an awful thing to say. And to put these videos out is absolutely beyond reproach. But what are those two actually doing? Well, one of the things they do, and this is beyond the pale, is send out begging letters asking lonely old people to spend $1,119 plus transaction fees and other and shipping costs so that their ashes can be put in some Templar chapel that doesn't exist. They're literally selling last wishes to lonely old people. It's despicable. And that's on top of all the other grifting. These people, they're not nice people. They say horrible things about nationalists. And for Jada Franson to say that anybody has been unproductive for nationalism is a complete joke, considering she built her reputation on bursting into mosques, hammering on people's doors, which led to a woman having a miscarriage, and she was jailed for that, and also going in to Muslim areas in Land Rovers, causing big kerfuffles, and then begging for money when these horrible events took place. To accuse us of looking for trouble, causing trouble, or leading others down a dead-end route is very rich coming from her. I don't know if Natty or Harry have got anything to say on that, being from the UK, but if you haven't, you haven't. But if you have, speak now.
I've never seen them do anything useful, and I've seen some of their begging letters. I mean, it's atrocious the way they word them. Dear Patreon, we've seen your name is not on the list. Just think things of this nature, and of course, going up to mosques, just shouting at mosques randomly. I mean, what good is that going to do anyone? Doesn't really help anyone, doesn't really do anything useful.
In fact, it brings down heat on everyone. They're the sort of people who make it so nationalists can't protest in the future because new laws get passed because of stupid activities.
Mm.
I will just add, I know that, you know, there's been some low level, you know, kind of sniping and stuff between PA and Nick Griffin and Jada Franson. But hearing Jada Franson, that monologue she gave about how the Plymouth shooter was your fault. And I think she blamed Amory Waters as well, strangely enough. Her two closest kind of political organizational rivals. Oh, what a coincidence. It's shocking that she did. I mean, I haven't had many dealings with Jada Franson. I haven't really watched any of her stuff, but to sit here and listen to her try and pin a mass murder on you, Mark, and another political organization is absolutely insane. And I think you should be very wary of someone who makes a statement like that. Maybe she would roll it back, but it seems like the people she's surrounded with now didn't call her out or challenge her on it. And it's such a debased and such a degenerate way to speak about your compatriots or people who are in the same, ostensibly the same fight as you. And I don't know how anyone could try and do such a thing.
No, I think it's very low when you're accusing people of basically causing a mass shooting when the people you're accusing are doing the very opposite of the things that led to that mass shooting. As we said earlier, that was caused due to this anti-white, anti-male rhetoric that alienates young men. And if anything, our fitness groups, our hiking groups, our camping groups are the kind of institutions that help young men come out of their shell and help them see that there is a better option than just sitting alone, stewing on the ills of the world. And I find it absolutely despicable. Anyway, we have one last super chat from Owen Grant, €3. Thank you so much, my friend. And he said, "Hey, Mark, I'm from Middlesbrough. Things are bad here. A lot of people seem to be aware of the issues we face. I want to do more. Have you any advice? Does PA have a presence here?" Owen, send us an email. Send an email to yorkshire@patrioticalternative.org.uk, and they will help you get in touch with the new Northeast branch that we are currently getting off the ground. We're currently building a vetted chat of activists in the Northeast, and we will be appointing an organizer, an admin officer, and other officers soon, so there will be regular events in your area. Thank you so much. Well, that brings us to the end of the show. And I would like to say thank you to Natty, thank you to Harry, and thank you to Jason. And everyone gets a chance to give themselves an outro. Natty, you first, my friend. You have been spectacular tonight.
Well, thanks for inviting me on. You know, the subject of prepping and and looking at the future has been on my mind. So it's been good to talk about it with like-minded individuals. And hail PA, thank you, Harry. Thank you, Mark. And thank you, Jason. And I look forward to seeing you again at some point.
Thank you so much. Harry, my friend, you have also been rather hot this evening, and I have, as always, enjoyed your company. Would you like to give yourself a little outro and tell us where we can find you? And obviously, everyone will be looking forward to hearing you at the next PA conference.
No, I can't wait for it. It's going to be a great conference. It's going to be amazing. I can't wait for it. I love the last one. And yeah, great to be on with you again, Mark. Thank you very much for having me on. Been a great show. Thank you to Natty as well. Great to speak to you again, and to Jason as well. Great to speak to you again. Yeah, if you want to find me, if you want to just see, I don't spam it. I only put out when there's something good to talk about. You can find me on Telegram. That's pretty much where I'm going to be. Maybe Odyssey in the future, but you know, I'll put stuff out there if I put stuff on Odyssey. But you can find me t.me/thetruk show. That's just all one word. Should be able to find you there. But yeah, it's been a great show. Thank you very much for having me on. Great to be back.
Thank you so much. Jason, my friend, give yourself a quick outro and then we'll wrap things up.
Big thank you to Natty and Harry. And of course, our leader here, Mark Collett. It was a magnificent conversation, truly splendid. A big thank you as well to the super chatter who showed appreciation for my contributions over the many years. Thank you so very much. And folks, Friday, going to have Jody K on. Make sure you are there. Your one and only Jody K. She'll be with us, me and Mr. Jared George, and we will see you all then. Pass it back.
Well, thank you so much. And what a massive show it has been tonight. I've just got the figures from Sven Longshanks. We had 560 on audio, 1,340 on video over at radioalbin.com. And on top of that, we had about 800 across DLive, Odyssey, and Entropy, giving us a total of 2,700 people watching this evening. Absolutely brilliant numbers for these excellent gentlemen that I have been joined by. Before we wrap up tonight, the Ayatollah is live now. Is that on YouTube or DLive? I don't know. Put the links in the chat so there is more superb nationalist content this evening. So do not go to bed just yet. I will be back on Friday with my Afghanistan take, and then I will also be back Friday evening for my debate with Destiny. I'm very much looking forward to that. It shall be quite interesting. It is on the topic of white genocide, the replacement and displacement of people of European descent in their ancestral homelands. Looking forward to that very much. I hope I do you guys proud. And other than that, remember, if you have bought a ticket for the PA conference that's coming up, or you had one reserved, you will have an email in your inbox now. Well, would be in the inbox on Friday. Please check that. All systems are go for later in the year. So that just leaves me to say thank you so much. Thank you to Natty. Thank you to Harry. Thank you to Jason. Thank you to all of the wonderful people who made such generous donations this evening. And of course, the biggest thank you goes to this amazing community. 2,700 people watching live tonight. The replays will be on BitChute and Odyssey. It has been absolutely wonderful. Hope to see you all again soon. Hope to see you in the live chat supporting me on Odyssey on Friday night. Until then, stay strong, keep fighting, and don't forget Friday night. Do not forget it, my friends. I will see you all there. Love you all. Look after yourselves. Good night, and go and watch Ayatollah. See you soon.